Welcome, everyone, to the Red Leaf Card, your home for Canadian soccer news and views. I am your special guest host today, Jason, and because we're doing a little bit of role reversal today, so I get out of the guest chair, and I get to sit in the host chair, and joining me for this episode is none other than your regular host for the Red Leaf Card, Jacob. Jacob, how does it feel to be in the other chair?
Kind of hilarious to make a swap, unlike your... substitute,
right? We're subbing in and out here and there. We got a lot to talk about today, including the FIFA Women's World Cup, which is coming up. We also have we're talking a little bit about the World Cup coming up in Canada, US, and Mexico, and as well we're going to be talking about just some of the hostilities in the beautiful game. But first, here's your fixtures from the past week. In Saturday in MLS, Montreal bested Charlotte 2-0. Chicago 1-0 over TFC. And that is four straight clean sheets the TFC has lost. They have not scored a goal in the month of July. In Vancouver, 4 over LA Galaxy 2. Ryan Gold with two goals on the score sheet. And then in the CPL, on Tuesday the 11th, Halifax bested Pacific 2-1. On Wednesday, it was Ottawa blanking Cavalry 2-0, with both of Ottawa goals coming in after the 80th minute. On Friday, York and Pacific played to a 0-0 draw. Pacific, by the way, has not won since June 21st. It's been all draws and losses since then. And this past Saturday, Cavalry bested Halifax 1-0. That's four wins in the last five games for Cavalry. And Forge and Valor played to a 1-1 draw. So now let's talk about a little bit of international soccer here. It's the Women's World Cup. It starts July 20th, and we have a lot to talk about here because we're going to go group by group and figure out who we think is going to make it out of the group stage. So, Jacob, let's start with Group A here. And the countries in Group A are Norway, ranked number 12 in the world, Switzerland at number 20, co-host New Zealand at 26, and Philippines making their Women's World Cup debut, ranked number 46. Now, how are you looking at here for New Zealand? Do you think they stand a chance to be one of the groups coming out of this, or one of the teams coming out of this group?
New Zealand, right?
New Zealand.
Well, it's always going to be one of the co-hosts that is going to have some pressure with who's going to be the best. You have, for example, Australia also. For example, the biggest country also. And now you have New Zealand also being the co-host of it. And they're in the Group A. You have, for example, Norway and Philippines and Switzerland. I think that New Zealand might have some of that pressure, but you still have Philippines that could actually help out for them to win. And there are some countries. I think that there's going to be a chance that New Zealand could make that second seat, actually that second spot in their group stage. And it's going to go down for Switzerland or Norway. I think Norway might actually make that spot into the knockout stage. And we might see, there might be some upsets, might be at that point.
This to me seems to be one of the more even groups as far as the, you know, the luck of the draw here. I mean, you don't have that much difference between the top three, between the 12th ranked Norway and 26th ranked New Zealand. I wonder though, you know, there's always that weight that's going to be on a co-host country. You know, it's good and bad. A, you want to play well in front of your home crowd. You want to play well when you're the host. But there's also, you get that energy boost from the crowd because they're going to be there for them. I do agree that Norway is probably going to be the team that kind of stands out on top of the group. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be a toss-up between Switzerland and New Zealand. And you never know. Philippines may come in and play spoiler on this one.
Yeah, for example, everyone knows that some countries might have their debuts actually do really well. Like, for example, like we've seen for Saudi Arabia, for example, that they come in and they did really well in the Men's World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a shocker. Saudi Arabia beat Argentina. No one even knew that was going to happen. And we've seen it how it went.
I do wonder if it was a case with Argentina playing down to the competition, not, or at least not knowing the competition as well as they probably do. I mean, you have some of these countries that have played each other over and over and over again. There is something to be said about the, you know, the intangibles brought on by being a newcomer to the competition. But let's move on to Group B, and this is where a lot of our attention is going to be, because that's where Canada is, ranked at number 7 in the world. You also have the other host country, Australia, ranked number 10. You have Nigeria at number 40, and you have Ireland ranked 22. Now, I question, okay, Canada's history at the Women's World Cup, it's a mixed bag. Their best finish, of course, was 2003 when they finished 4th. That's after losing in the semifinals and then losing in the third place match. This is going to be Christine Sinclair's final World Cup. Do you think we're going to have a bit of what we kind of saw at the Men's World Cup, the Messi effect, right? Knowing that there's always that possibility that it may or may not be the final World Cup. Like, do you have a feeling that Canada is going to be playing not just for national pride and not just for this, for competition's sake, but a little bit extra hard for Christine Sinclair?
Like, it might be not that Messi effect. For example, maybe it could be actually the effect of the men's World Cup in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about Canada thinking, oh, they scored their first goal against Croatia, but Croatia, oh, they come back winning in that match. But I would say that I think you have two countries, maybe even, for example, Republic of Ireland being their debut. And you might not know how Canada basically might actually handle that pressure of these countries. Like, we've seen friendlies with against Nigeria. You don't usually see those kind of matches do on in friendlies, but they do it on during the World Cup. They bring that 100% in, and people usually say Canada is usually the top 10 countries that could do it, but Canada might not just go, we make it to the knockout. But you have a lot of, we've seen a lot of drama happening in the Canadian Soccer Association, and now you see the women's national team being now in this, really in this pressure. Can they win those matches? I have seen, like, for example, there was closed doors that Canada was versus England in their friendlies, and when I hear the coach for the Canada team versus England, not really happy at all. And I'm like, well, you won against England. They're more higher than you.
I mean, you can still win and not be happy with how the outcome of the actual the match, because you're taking a look not especially in a friendly. You're taking a look not necessarily at the result. You're taking a look at the performance on the field. And if there is this situation where you have, you know, yeah, sure, we won, but we were sloppy, you don't want to go on camera and, you know, in front of the press and say, yeah, we did. It means nothing.
And maybe it's kind of, how's the defense? How's the midfielders? How's the shot attempts? Were how's the possession of it? Maybe it could be that part.
It is quite possible. One of the things I want to point out here too is that yes, it's Ireland's first go at the World Cup. This is not the women's Canadian women's first go. That's for sure. With the men, you brought up 2022 and the men's World Cup. One of the things I want to bring up is the fact that when it comes to the men last year, you have this situation where it's, they worked so hard to get there. You know, part of the build up during that run, during those qualifiers, was Canada finally getting over the hurdle and appearing in a World Cup for the first time in a long time. Then they get there. And I'm not saying that they crapped the bed. They actually played very well. But it's a different scenario. With the women, they're much more experienced. You know, they're coming off of a gold medal at the Olympics. They're ranked number 7 in the world. But with this group, you know, this is not an easy group. take a look at it. They have never played Ireland before, so there's a bit of an unknown factor there. But against Australia, one draw. Against Nigeria, one loss and one draw. So they've never actually won a game against any of these teams at that level. So you have to think that they're going to go in, stick to their game plan, and do the best they can. I still think Canada comes out of the group, but I wonder who comes out of there with them.
But there could be two ways. For example, Canada might not make it, or it could be second at this point.
You don't think they're going to take the whole group, like top of the group, do you?
But I think it's the whole pressure that's happening right now, but we might not know, because right now it's all how they play.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they play. But to be honest, if I have to be more realistic at this point, it could be Australia and Canada.
I mean,
at this point,
that's my guess. I'll be curious to see what Ireland does there. Ireland is going in with a major injury, of course. They lost Denise O'Sullivan to a shin injury going up against Colombia in that recent friendly that had to be called off.
So we could go on Group C
point. I think so. So Group C, you have the 6th ranked Spain, 11th ranked Japan, 36th ranked Costa Rica, and the lowest seed in the tournament, making their FIFA Women's World Cup debut, Zambia, who's sitting at 77th. There's a lot to be said about Zambia, too. I mean, going into this tournament, you have Barbara Branda, who's able to play in this tournament after many, many allegations against her that were all proven false, and it's not good. And then with their head coach being accused of sexual misconduct going into this tournament, do you fear that that's going to draw the attention away from the play on the field?
Like, if you have allegations that were basically truly false at this point, I think the whole thing, you have to realize that it's false at this point.
Mm.
You shouldn't continue on with this whole drama at this point. And in my opinion, how the journalists have to bring this up now and pressure it, stop.
Yeah. With Barbara Bonda, she's probably going to come in with a bit of a chip on her shoulder and willing to and ready to play. They're in tough, right? I mean, you've got the 6th and the 11th seeded teams in this with Spain and Japan. And, you know, obviously, you know, any betting man is going to sit there and put their money on those two countries making it out of the group stage. It's tough, though.
And it's just like, for example, that the allegations against Vancouver Whitecaps Academy,
mm-hmm.
which basically was true. And the Canadian Soccer Association had to cover this up.
Yeah, no, it's horrible when these things come out and takes away from what is supposed to be a wonderful celebration of the game. So I agree with you. I hope that the focus is on the women on the field and the game that's being played. And again, I still think it's Japan and Spain that come into this. But who do you have coming into Group C?
I would have to agree with those two countries. But if there was a country that really wants to succeed at this point, that might be the fans' favorites that are coming in, I think it would be Zambia, because of the whole pressure at this point.
All right, let's move on to Group D. And in my,
or it could be Costa Rica at this point. It's anyone's fave.
Well, exactly. I mean, obviously, we'll probably, you know, watch the group stage and then come back on the show and go, okay, we were right or we were wrong. And we're probably going to be, at least I know me, I'm going to be more wrong than I am right here. Group D, however, everyone always takes a look at which group is the group of death. Some people have pointed to Group B as being a group of death. To me, this seems to be the one that's going to be the most competitive and the biggest chance for upsets here. You've got
and a debut.
Exactly. So you've got England at number 4, Denmark ranked 13th, China ranked 14th, and debuting Haiti ranked 53rd. And England's coming in with a few injuries on their own here. You got Beth Mead and Lee Williamson who are on the injured list. But you still have players like Georgia Stanway, Ella Tooney, and Chloe Kelly. Like, it's a solid team, and it's, you know, it's hard to think that England's not going to make it out of the group stage. But, I mean, this is a good group for England. But, I mean, you've got Denmark.
But you have injuries.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, if you're going in, A, with the weight of expectation, B, you're having to move things around. I mean, like, losing Beth Mead to injury before the World Cup, that's huge. She's such a good player, yeah. Right? I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, Georgia Stanway, Ella Tooney, Chloe Kelly, you know, anyone who watches the FA Women's Super League knows that these players bring it every single game. Like, it's a solid lineup that they've got, and it's hard to really bet against England. But, I mean, taking a look at that second spot, you know, if you have England as a shoe-in to get out of the group, between China and Denmark and Haiti, who do you think comes out as the other team?
I think you have to pick probably two countries at this point. Denmark or China. But the matter of fact is, you see China mostly a lot of times. They make it to the actual knockout stage. But you're going to have a pressure with Denmark at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's going to be... a lot of people might be ignoring how Haiti's doing. But the matter of fact is, their debut. How is Haiti going to basically actually surprise this group?
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think this group is actually also a group to watch at this point.
The other thing too is, you mentioned from the Men's World Cup, the, you know, Saudi Arabia upsetting Argentina. Anything could happen in the group stage, right? And a team like Haiti can come in and, you know, upset the power balance with a simple upset if a team comes in and, you know, either whether dealing through injuries or, you know, playing down to the competition can upset the power balance, because you've got three games. You've got three games to make it out of there. And how you do in a short span of time is all determined on being in the moment every single time. Group E, this is an interesting group to me because you have two powerhouse teams, USA ranked number one and Netherlands ranked number nine. But then you have two debuts in this group. Portugal at number 21 and Vietnam ranked 32nd here. Obviously, all eyes are going to be on USA and the Netherlands. Do Portugal and Vietnam have a chance to make it out of the group stage at all?
I feel like that you're going to have a lot of these two countries. They're going to get so many jabs to the face at their matches versus these two countries at this point. But Portugal versus Vietnam might be to start at this point. Who would be the best country in this pod?
I think of any of the debuting countries with a chance to get past the group stage, I think Portugal probably has that. I mean, Portugal's got a long story, soccer history, at least on the men's side. And you have to think that that's, you know, that tradition is going to carry over into the Women's World Cup. USA, I think, is a given to make it out of the group stage. You know, you have the best team in the world.
Yeah.
Like, there's zero question, I think.
No question. They're number one.
Exactly. I mean, barring injuries, barring anything, you know, not soccer related, I think the group stage is theirs. But Netherlands, I mean, I would not be surprised if Portugal does make it out of the group stage, meaning Netherlands and Vietnam don't. Like, that's my upset prediction at this point.
But imagine like USA actually loses to a match against their debut countries.
Oh, one win or one loss? And all of a sudden, the pressure's on. And you saw that a little bit. Like,
or a draw.
Exactly, right? Don't put yourself... like, come out and dominate. Don't put yourself playing catch-up right off the bat. You know, so a team like USA cannot underestimate their competition at all, right? Because anything can happen. absolutely anything can happen. Group F, you've got France ranked number 5, Brazil at the 8th ranked, Jamaica at 43, and debuting Panama 52nd ranked. France coming in with this one. Injuries to Celan Baca, Delphine Casarino, and Marie-Antoinette Katoto. Again, another team, a high-ranking team coming in with a lot of injuries. Does this open the door for Brazil and Jamaica and Panama?
Oh, you have to know when the start of the date, when they can return at this point. Is it going to be like daily only for the injury, or is it going to be monthly, the whole World Cup? Mm-hmm. So it might open some countries to that other spot.
The other thing too is how severe the injury and how willing the or how able the player is to play through anything. You know, if it's an ankle tweak, then maybe you've got a chance kind of thing. But, you know, already, you know, if you're counting the players that are on the injured list and going into a tournament, the blood's in the water and the sharks are sniffing around here. Brazil, I think, regardless of what happens with France, I think Brazil makes it through in, you know, out of the group stage. I don't know about Jamaica, but Panama's intriguing to me in this one. And if France is hobbling, there's an opportunity for an upset. Group G has number 3 ranked Sweden, the 16th ranked Italy, Argentina at 28, and South Africa at 54. Again, you've got a high-ranking team, and then you have a lot of a mid-tier in there. Group G, who do you have coming out of that?
I keep on forgetting the rankings of those countries at this point. So I think Sweden is one of those. It's going to be in the next round.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to pick. But I can't even, in my mind, I can't even pick any of the ones who is going to be in the second spot at this point. I think it's just going to be who's going to make it.
And then the other thing too with this group is that this is the only group in the group stage where every team has at least one World Cup appearance in them. There are no debut countries in this group at all. So you have experience going into this. I mean, yeah, Sweden ranked number 3. You have to think that past the group stages for them. But I mean, Italy, Argentina, South Africa, these are all really good teams. And I would not be surprised if, you know, you're looking at Group G for probably the most competitive group.
So it might be, I don't know, I might pick Italy at this point, taking that second Argentina.
It is hard, but I between Argentina and South Africa, the potential is there for this to be, you know, one of those groups where there's a lot of draws, probably a few games going to kicks, and, you know, it's going to be competitive, and it could just be the simple, you know, which way does the field tilt in any given half, right? And then finally, you got Group H. You got Germany ranked number 2, the 25th ranked Colombia, 17th ranked Korea Republic, and 72nd debuting Morocco. Aside from Germany, do you think, by any chance, Morocco has a chance?
Well, they have to be versing South Korea for that at this point.
Well, I mentioned the friendly they got called off for Ireland. That was against Colombia. Colombia was playing like a real rough game. It was to the point where like they had to stop the game and say, look, this is a friendly, but it's turning into a bar brawl. Like
with Colombia?
Yeah, with Ireland and Colombia. Like they stopped the match like 20 minutes in. So
just basically what the score was.
It didn't matter. It was an international friendly. They're like, "Yeah, no, forget this. We're not playing again. If this is the way you're going to play, we're not playing that way." You know, Ireland loses a player to injury in a friendly. So Colombia is clearly coming in trying to potentially muscle their way through the group stage. And you have to take a look. Like at 25th ranked, there's a possibility that they could out-muscle a team like Korea or Morocco. Like, if that's the way you're going to play.
Trying to be physical.
Pretty much, yeah. We've broken into song now. This is where we're at. So I do think Colombia does. Yeah.
Maybe it could be Colombia at this point. But if they're going to basically be really physical at this point, but how many red cards are you going to be being called?
That was the other thing I was going to point out, is that how much are the refs going to let them play, right? You know, it's one thing to see, you know, a few yellow cards, maybe the occasional over embellishment of a takedown. You know, hard challenges are going to happen. But if you get into a very physical match with a team like Colombia, and especially going into this tournament knowing what has already happened, how much are you going to allow to happen on the field? Because if you let it get to that physical point without red carding, without drawing a line in the sand, then is the match and that group going to devolve into a physical altercation, or at least a bullying match in the group stage?
That's always the question about that groups at that point.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it a lot too, and you know, we'll get back to the Women's World Cup in a second there. But since we're talking about this, you know, at the Gold Cup, U.S. men's national team and the Canadian men's national team, you know, got into a bit of a scuffle
in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, after the match in the tunnels. And for the U.S. men's team, this is not the first time. Of course, they got into that fight with Mexico during an earlier match with them
in the Nations Cup.
Exactly. You are seeing a lot of hostilities on the international stage, and it's hard to kind of look away from this, because obviously, you know, we're in a time of international tensions, you know, and looking at the, you know, the teams that are in this, you're not seeing teams that are currently in conflicts, although you're seeing a lot of teams that are, there are tensions there, you know, at the international political level. And I wonder if some of that is spilling onto the field as well.
I think it may be all of this whole thing, but I think the whole thing, no one likes to lose to USA at this point. Like, for example, Mexico, for example, if they verse into a competition, like, for example, it's always been the Gold Cup. They don't like losing to USA at this point. They always have this shuffle during matches. We see them getting red cards. And it could be always that rivalry, that who could beat USA. Right now, we've seen Panama already beat USA in a penalty shootout and penalty kicks. Glad for that. Already, Canadians could already sleep on that. And Panama is versing Mexico in the finals.
I mean, you have these, you know, lines in the sand being drawn on political levels, even in entertainment. Like, just taking a look at Group E, right? You have USA and Vietnam. And this is going to sound really, really stupid, but you have to point this out here. You know, and I can't believe I'm bringing this up, but the Barbie movie is not being played in Vietnam because there's this childlike map drawn in the film that shows the nine dash line. You have
there's a costume of it.
Yeah, like it's there's so much that people are taking offense to, and we're seeing it with the hostilities on the field. Are you worried, as a soccer fan, are you worried that play at the international level is going to suffer from political tensions between the various nations?
Well, the whole thing, I always think about this whole thing, that it was always been in the World Cup, talking about politics during matches. And it's always been about, oh, let's bring in human rights all this time. And I'm always like, every single time when you're going to make a statement about human rights, it ruins this love of the sport of the World Cup. It was never always about that from a long time ago. And I know, like, journals always bringing this up. try to make an article about something about the country. And he's like, foreign countries. It's always been from, I've heard from England, for example. They always bring up human rights and stuff like that. United States, for example, human rights. It's always been this whole, for example, Qatar, the whole thing. And it's always been this saying about homophobic, about Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the whole thing, why you have to bring this up in the World Cup? It's, you have to ruin a someone's country's culture at this point.
I think there's a lot, there are lines here. And I think with Qatar, and there are countries where it is illegal to be gay. And that's not good, because there are LGBTQ athletes playing today, and you cannot discount them because some country ponied up the money to host a World Cup, right?
Well, you do have athletes up actually representing for the national team.
Yeah.
But the matter of fact is, protesting about this is not a good thing about it. But now I've seen you, no one talks about it, even Africa. There's majority of African countries already, for example, Uganda. It's illegal to be gay.
Yeah. The thing is, a sporting event, let's kind of draw our lines at the sand here. An event is not going to change the culture of a country on its own. It can't. And it shouldn't. But the problem, though, is that when these host countries, and this is probably more on FIFA itself, is that if you're going to allow a country to host an event, then maybe rather than take a look at the finances and how much money the country is willing to put up, and no matter what it takes to put on that event, take a look at the country's history, current history. Because, you know, in the past, and there isn't a single country on this planet that doesn't have some kind of checkered past, but take a look at recent socioeconomic and cultural ideologies, I guess, if you will, and ask yourself, are the players that are in this tournament going to this country going to feel safe for being themselves? And if the answer is maybe not, then maybe don't let that country bid on that event. But the thing is, FIFA, and there have been documentaries about this, you know, on countless platforms and in countless, you know, scenarios, talking about how FIFA comes in, takes the money, and runs, basically. And they don't care, like, what this country does, when the tournament's not there. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
Well, majority was basically, like, for example, CONCACAF. There was a whole thing about CONCACAF of fraud.
Mm-hmm.
But majority of the other ones, UEFA, they don't do that. But the matter of fact is, there was a person for that is the president of Real Madrid. They wanted to, you don't want to split from UEFA's Champions League and just make a Super League with the largest teams.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the president of UEFA would be basically said, if you're going to be part of this this whole thing, this project, all the players and the teams would basically be banned for playing the competitions for UEFA. And basically people, even fans supported about this of it. But a matter of fact is, in Spain, they're for this, what Real Madrid wanted.
I know, it's, I hope.
But, and this is something I always think of. I don't like promoting politics in the World Cup. This is something that people need to realize something about. It's always been like this, and I know it's always a dark history about it. But if you continue on, sooner or later there's going to be a dark path going in every single year. And sooner or later, you're going to see a lot of athletes sooner or later feel like, did we ruin the beautiful sport of soccer, aka football?
I do hope that this is an outlier. I do hope that it's just, you know, the excitement of the World Cup, and that's kind of where it's at. But and being in Australia and New Zealand, we haven't had to have those kind of human rights conversations as we did in Qatar. I mean, building the stadiums in Qatar and the structures in that heat, people died in Qatar building the facilities for that tournament. You're not hearing that out of Australia and New Zealand. So I think that we're going to have a less conversation about that. But I do hope that, with a team like Colombia or with Zambia, that we get past the non-soccer conversation and the focus is on the pitch. But before we move on, though, I'm going to put this out to you here, because we talked about who's going to come out of the group stage. So if you had to put on your future-seeking, fortune-telling hat, if you will, who do you see as the final four going into the World Cup?
Wow. Well, that's the semifinals at this point. You're going to be, you have USA, for example. Everyone always is going to pick USA at this point. If USA is in first place, they're going to be versing the runner-up for Group G. So that'll be Italy, for example, or Argentina, because I have Sweden number one in the group stage.
So you're looking at USA, Sweden, in your final four. Who else?
So if I picked, so I do have, for example, sometimes I do want to see Canada in the final four at the points, but if Canada is the runner-ups, you're forgetting what group they are, C?
No, they're Group B.
Group B. If they were the runner-ups in Group B, you have the winner of Group D,
which would probably be England
at this point.
Yeah.
So, if my opinion, if they were in that scenario, if Canada was versing England in the knockout stage, that's kind of a pressure at this point. But that's a hard one, in my opinion, for Canada. Putting them in the semis.
Maybe let me make this a simpler question here. Do you see a path for Canada to make it to the semis?
It's going to be a lot of pressure, I think. But you see Canada in the top 10 ranks, but you have England above them.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fans, if you're Canadian fans out there, I think, and want Sinclair to go full way, I think they're going to pick Canada over England, but it have to be a realistic thing here. How is Canada going to basically run through England at this point? But if Canada, but I'm still a scenario, if Canada was first place,
if Canada wins their group stage,
that's it. So that would be, at this point, runner-up of Group D.
Which, at this point, you have to think, it's either going to be China or Denmark. Possibly Haiti, you never know. But if you're guessing that this is going to be Denmark or China.
But that's still the point here. And you might not see where you have to know at this point. Well, I'd still think England's going to be number one. But what if there's changes? That's the point here.
Mm-hmm.
So I might pick, I'm at this point, Denmark or China. So you still have, in my opinion, that you still have a good chance here. You still have a good chance here for if you're the winner in that group stage. You most likely might not suffer that much in the knockout stage. But if you're going to be versing England in that knockout stage for the first round of the knockout stage, you might be eliminated at this point. But fans will be like, no, Canada is going to do really well versus England. I would just have to, it might be a flip of a coin for me at this point. But I don't like doing this prediction at this point against Canada or England.
Okay, one more prediction, though, and it's not team-based here, okay? Group stage, Christine Sinclair, over or under 2 goals. Does she score more or less than that in the group stage?
Well, you have a lot of players that could actually score goals. So I do think could be 2.
So you,
or 2 or over, maybe, you might think.
Yeah.
At this point.
And again, you're going against Nigeria, Australia, and Ireland. So
it says you're going to be versing, yeah, Nigeria and Ireland.
Does Christine Sinclair score more or less than 2 goals in the group stage?
It's going to be, in my opinion, that they're going to be having a format of 4-3-3. So you're going to have basically more players going to be scoring goals. So it could be Christine Sinclair scoring 3 or 2 in the group stage.
Okay, so you're thinking a push or an over. I personally, I don't know if she's going to score 2 in the group stage, but I have a feeling she's going to be, you know, in on making a lot of some of those goals happen. I think, you know, more than 2 assists, but I don't know necessarily about the goals, because, you know, Christine Sinclair, I think, is, I mean, she can do whatever she wants with the ball on her foot, so, you know, she can score at will, or she can help spread the wealth around. But it's going to be fascinating to watch. Remember, those matches start July 20th, so it's coming up fast and furious. Finally, since we're still talking international soccer here, the Men's World Cup is coming to North America, being co-hosted by Canada, the USA, and Mexico. Toronto, being one of those co-host cities, just got a new mayor, Olivia Chow. Just before she took office, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation has called on the city to cancel the $100+ million of spending on the World Cup, saying that it's too much money to put into an event that's going to be only a few games here. I'm going to ask you, and again, we've talked about some of the politics already, but there is a lot of money that goes into being a host city. Do you agree with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation that Toronto needs to take that money and refocus it into infrastructure and other things, or host the event?
Well, to be honest, agree and disagree sometimes, because I'm mostly in the middle of all things, like, thought about it, of what they're saying, but you have so many things that our new mayor, you know, of Toronto is thinking about,
mm-hmm.
that it could be more expensive through all the way to 2026. And right now the cost of price might be $300 million, which you have the 9-digit number for basically doing this whole thing. And the crazy part was about saying that it would cost like 60 grand per minute.
Per minute of actual soccer time, yeah.
I'm like, really? About that? It was kind of crazy of that estimate that taxpayers are going to be paying per minute for that much. Yeah, but the matter of fact is you already have a project already at BMO Field for the North and South seats coming in, and Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment said that they were going to use 3,300 jobs for that event. But if you want to save more money on Toronto, there's always canceled projects on bike lanes. Which mostly that's something that the mayor have been thinking about for her campaign, and the whole renaming of a street in Toronto, which costs millions of taxpayers. That's a thing that the mayor could actually do,
mm-hmm.
to basically save money, because we don't need a street to be renamed in Toronto, because I think it's a weird idea.
I mean, yes, streets do get dedicated all the time. I don't disagree with the fact that there are other projects that can be canceled. Yes, you don't need to rename a street. No, I do agree that we do need more bike lanes, and we do need to create more safer ways for alternate transportation, because you do have people that are you know, finding different ways to get around town. And I mean, like, I've been to New York City, like right in Manhattan, and you do have some streets where it's basically a bike lane and cars are not allowed to drive on it. And it works very well.
Yeah, and Europe does it better.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, pointing at bike lanes is not necessarily the answer. I mean, let's call this out right now. The World Cup is coming to Toronto, and no amount of timed press releases to coincide with a new mayor is going to change that. The city of Toronto is going to pay that. You brought up MLSC creating like 3,300 jobs because of this. This is where money is well spent, even if it is short term, in that you do have an influx of people coming in to see the games. You have an influx of part-time job opportunities for the event.
Well, I have to retract my cost there. It would be basically estimated near $645,000.
Per minute of soccer.
Yeah.
But the thing is, take a look at the hotel industry, which, let's be honest here, right? We are out of the pandemic, and you had some industries which were decimated. Restaurants, hotels, tourism, all of these industries have been raising the rates in order to try to recoup some of those losses. So an event like the World Cup coming to a city like Toronto is going to help reinvigorate some of those industries. You're going to hotels are going to bring in extra staff. Restaurants are going to be hiring extra waiters and cooks and servers and everything, right? You're going to have more tourism, which means that all these shops that are in the areas of the stadiums and in that, you're going to have people enjoying the city, which means more money into small businesses. And then, while I don't disagree that, you know, spending a lot of money on an event that's only going to last like a week or two, it's a big ask. But ask the small businesses and the larger ones too that are going to benefit from that influx of people coming to see the games and the teams that are going to be staying in these cities, not to mention, you know, the attention that it's going to bring to MLS soccer, to the Canadian Premier League, to League One Canada. The attention that's brought to the sport at all levels is going to be huge, leading up to the World Cup. And that's always a good thing.
And it's not just that. It's going to thrive small businesses and financially. But we could talk also, for example, a city that basically, oh, you know what, we're not going to host. We're not going to be part of it. Because the only reason, it was Edmonton. They wanted, I've heard they wanted 10 matches for the group stage. They wanted it for a knockout stage.
You have to look at the infrastructure too, of the city.
Yeah, even for how much it's going to cost.
Right. I mean, the infrastructure of the city has to be able to accommodate that size of influx of people. And while Edmonton is a lovely city, I've been there, you know, before, to have that, you know, that influx of world population, not just of the teams, because the city of Edmonton proved during the Stanley Cup bubble in 2020 that they could handle the extra teams there. But you also didn't have the influx of people going to the games because those games were held in empty arenas. So it was, while it was a similar scale as far as an event went, it was not a similar scale as far as the attendance went. It was a made-for-TV event because people could not go. Here, you have the teams that are coming in and as well as the fans of that team. And the city has to be able to have the hotels, the restaurants, the nightlife, because that's the thing. People are going to go to games and then they're going to want to go out and party afterwards. And is the entertainment there for those fans, right? You're going to see in Toronto, you're going to see nightclubs and live music and the street parties and the whole thing. It's going to be an entertainment mecca for the days that Toronto is hosting the World Cup. So that $100 million that the Canadian Taxpayers Federation has said, no, we should spend this elsewhere. Okay, where? And where is that $100 million going to have the most impact on the businesses and the community?
And this whole, I've heard that the federal, even the provincial, is going to help out for paying for this. And there was also city plans for spending $15 million to upgrade sport fields, like, for example, Sunnybrook and Centennial Parks.
See, again, with that money becomes infrastructure into making sure the facilities are there for people.
And even $25 million to increase capacity for BMO Field.
Yeah. But let's take this the other way. You know, we see the benefits here. What damage would this do to the reputation of Canada Soccer and the city of Toronto if they actually said, okay, you know, maybe they're right, maybe we should, and then all of a sudden Toronto's no longer a host city?
Well, if taxpayers group for Federation decided, oh, you know what, we're going to go for Vancouver, even BC place to boycott.
Well, I mean, the Canadian Taxpayer Federation has no say in the matter itself. They're just trying to use the election of Olivia Chow to raise, you know, to kind of get on their bully pulpit. But I mean, what if?
But
what if Toronto said, oh, no, you're right, we should, and they turn around and say, we're not going to be a host city. Does that damage the World Cup as a whole to you if it's not in Toronto?
Well, there's always something that people need to write and know about of if you're a Torontonian.
Mm-hmm.
You're living in an expensive area. Sooner or later, tax rate is going to go higher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the risks you're going to have during 2026. And yeah, you heard the taxpayers group said, if you're going to, you could use that money for livable housing. That was one of them. They basically said, and if Olivia Chow wanted, basically say, you know what, you're actually correct about this. And then later, it could actually damage her.
Absolutely. Like the hit to her reputation, if they were to pull out of the World Cup and redirect the financing, soccer fans and even small businesses and anyone who was going to benefit, like by getting work during this event, they would then sit there and say, well, thanks for nothing.
Yeah, but this is something I always think about. About politicians. Why do you have this small touch on, hey, you know what, I don't believe that this sporting entertainment of this sport really kind of really helps us in our country. For example, I've seen politicians don't really care about the Canadian Premier League. They don't care about the sporting of basketball. You've seen that, how now you have more. I've noticed that the Canadian League Basketball League, for example, that's something. Not just that, I could bring up the World Cup of basketball into this situation. It was in the 90s. And it was also played in the Sky Dome, which now it is the Rogers Center. And it really cost a lot to host for it. Every single year, it's always going to raise the price for hosting it. And everyone really knows you want that large entertainment of bringing fans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it grows a lot of entertainment. And Toronto has brought in tourists.
Oh, it's, you know, Toronto is one of the most visited cities in the country. Absolutely. Probably right next to Vancouver and Montreal as far as population goes. But I mean,
even for example, lots of people always question, okay, why Montreal is one of those other cities that could have hosted it. And it's also one of the visited entertainments. It's a lot. It's a really entertaining cities.
I mean, I remember being in Vancouver and in 2010, just before the Olympics got there.
And it's still.
But the thing is, as you're walking around the city, like, and this is before the Olympics started, like this is in the lead up to the Olympics, and you saw companies that were prepped and ready to go and were benefiting from the influx of people that were coming in. They were, that city was ready for the Olympics. And it's not like they had to put in too much infrastructure. You did have to adjust some of the transportation getting up to Whistler and whatnot. But I mean, like, you had natural, you know, it was a natural choice. The same thing with Calgary back in 88. It was a natural choice to host the Winter Olympics there because you had a lot. I mean, you had mountainous regions there. You were ready to go for a lot of those winter events. Yes, they did put in some new facilities, and those facilities are still being used today as training grounds for Winter Olympians. Here with Toronto, aside from, you know, Ontario being, you know, the center province really for most of the CPL, like three of the teams are here. You have the largest of the provincial leagues in Ligue 1 Canada here in Ontario. You have soccer is here, and it's a multicultural city. The benefits to me outweigh the negatives, but I know, I recognize that the Canadian Taxpayer Federation is taking advantage of the moment to get on their soapbox, and it's a minor distraction, I think, at the least.
But I could bring it when Montreal hosted the Olympics, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1976. That Olympic stadium is never been used that much.
Well, once the Expos
and it's were really gone, expensive.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, once the Expos were out of there, you know, and the Alouettes were definitely not filling that stadium at all. And now there is a history of, you know, host cities and host countries that have built stadiums and built infrastructure to handle these large sporting events, and then those buildings,
even Munich,
become
even Russia.
Yeah, Sochi was really bad for that. But the thing is, if there isn't a team that's going to necessitate the need to keep the upkeep of the stadium, then that's going to happen. The Expos were that team, but then Montreal lost the Expos and they made their way down to Florida. And there has been so much talk about trying to bring another baseball team to Montreal, but at this point, that stadium would need to have to be torn down, gutted, and put back up, and, you know, and rebuilt.
There was rumors that Tampa Bay was,
yeah, they're talking about splitting the season, but that's not going to happen. Tampa Bay's not going to allow that to happen. The Rays are a good team, and the city does like it. It's just a matter of what does the owner want to do. The thing is, nothing new is being built that's going to be left to be decrepit. They're enhancing facilities, you know, in order to accommodate, but you don't have to build anything brand new. And I think that's the way to go.
Or even, for example, how affected Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. There's a laundry list of countries that have let infrastructure, you know, rot and die. That it was there for a short time and neglected and decrepit
in large events. It's really that positive and negative how you change everything.
Yeah.
Into it, but you have to have a good a smart person to fix things these events, because if you can't, you're going to have a stadium built, who's going to run it at this point to make it a better entertainment, for example?
Yeah, it's a what happens next thing.
It's just like, for example, everyone knows how it happened in Germany, for example, and like basically a long time ago, there was a field that was for sporting event, and basically no one used it at the point. And for example, Russia. Exactly.
Oh yeah, no, the Sochi buildings are and also that happened fast too.
But the ones that are more remember the 2008 Olympics, in China.
Mm.
They just used it as a sporting place, like what was it, like a Chinese Super League team.
Yeah, all of a sudden you have, like, again, if there is a plan for after the event, then the building makes sense. And I think with Toronto, they're smart about it. They're using current infrastructure and adapting it and adding to it in order to be able to host. There are the list of cities and countries that have the infrastructure in place so that the money needed to enhance as opposed to build is starting to get smaller and smaller. I just think that this whole thing with the CTF coming out saying no, spend the money elsewhere, it's opportunistic.
But you know what kind of worries about me about BMO Field is the north and south seating. It really does kind of worry about it. How is it going to actually look like? Because you're going to get rid of most likely large board of the score, even for example. And to be honest, how the south seating is going to look like, I think that is really a question of the fans.
I mean, it's a good stadium, and you know, for some of the smaller games, you know. Obviously, if Canada or USA plays in one of the games in Toronto, you have to think that they're going to do that at the Rogers Centre, where they're going to convert it to a soccer field. And I have seen a world soccer game.
Even when the Raptors played.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But I've seen soccer at the Rogers Centre, and it was great. So you have a large facility like that. And the smaller, you know, maybe not as well-attended you know, foreign team games can be held at BMO and it's fine, you know, and you have, you know, it's not that really that far to get from one to the other, right? So if you have tickets for multiple games, it's easy to get back and forth to, you know, keep in mind too, you also have York Lions Stadium, you have the U of T Stadium, you have smaller fields that can handle some of the games that aren't going to have the influx of people going to see them. But the bigger games, of course, are going to be at the Rogers Centre. And I don't think it's, you know, you don't need to do much to the Rogers Centre because they just went through renovations for this year's baseball season. So they've already upped the interior of that.
Yeah. Actually, it was actually a good renovation.
Oh, yeah. It looks great in there.
And to be honest, how they're going to upgrade the BMO Field, it does really question, are they going to renovate the whole thing after that? In the future run.
That's the thing. If you're creating temporary additions to the east and west stands, or even to the south stand, just to accommodate
north and south.
Yeah, exactly. If you're just adding temporary ones in there, just to accommodate for the event, ones that can be taken down afterwards. Okay, that's fine. That's smart money.
Well, that'll be actually more smarter. But a matter of fact is, if you're gonna actually use those north and south seats for the future, how does the future hold for the long run at this point?
I mean, let's put this into perspective here. The capacity at BMO Field is 30,991, and it's expandable to 40,000. You know, so you have enough space for a World Cup game that includes, or at least a group stage game that doesn't include any of the host countries. So if Canada, USA, or Mexico are not in one of those games, then you've got more than enough seating, I think, at BMO Field to accommodate that.
Yeah, there's some matches going to be in the group stage. They're actually going to be in the group stage.
Oh, absolutely. And for those bigger matches that include, like, you know, like Canada, put that in the Rogers Centre, absolutely. But you have to take a look at how many people are going to be buying tickets for these games. Is it going to be, and I'll ask you this, if you have a game that does not include Canada or the US or Mexico in Toronto, do you foresee more than 40,000 people buying tickets? You know,
Well, it's the World Cup. Everyone's going to go.
It's a blanket statement. But, you know, if you have a game like Japan versus Morocco, and I'm just throwing two teams out there, you know, are you going to get more than 40,000 fans for a game like that? Probably not.
Well, if you're going to have foreign visitors, yeah.
40,000, though?
40,000? Well, you're going to have maybe some Canadians interested and some foreign fans.
I would personally be shocked if you would get more than 40,000. Now, Canada's playing, then yes, 40,000 and then some. So you move that to the Rogers Centre.
Well, you have the even supporters, the Voyagers, Red Patch, a lot of supporters aren't going to go see it. So I would basically say yes.
Okay.
You're going to have a lot.
You and I are going to disagree on this one, I think, here. I would be surprised if a non-Canada, non-USA matchup gets more than 40,000. I mean, go ahead, expand it a bit more if you can. If you can get to 50,000, great. But I think a 40,000-seat stadium is going to be enough for a non-marquee matchup game. All I know is that Toronto is going to host. It's going to host well. And nothing that the CTF says is going to really change that.
But if you're going to bring, if Canada was versing like one of the best countries.
Oh, Canada versus England? Rogers Centre. Right away. Get as many seats as you can in there.
But you're going to, like, for example, if you're going to bring in Poland, for example, yeah, this is going to still work.
Oh, absolutely.
Even for into a larger one.
Oh, again. Even yeah, USA, England, right? Or USA, Brazil. You put that in the Rogers Center because, again, you're going to have people coming over from across, like from New York, from Rochester, from Buffalo. You're going to have people coming in from Michigan. You're going to have fans descending upon. I just think BMO Field is good enough for some of the non-marquee matchups.
Or what was it? I could still bring in, like, for example, Netherlands. There's still going to be a larger country that will be interested. But if you're going to have a lower-ranked country that's on their debuts, most likely I have to say they're not that much of a capacity.
Yeah.
They're going to have some seating that are not going to...
The current infrastructure is good enough. Yeah, do what you can in order to improve transit for that. But I think current infrastructure is going to be handled. That is full time for the Red Leaf Card. I'm your special guest host, Jason, subbing out.